Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. I am not even going to give a weather report today, as I usually do on Monday. I'll just say that this week will be more of the same, cold and snowy all week long. So let's go right to Dennis Hart with the news.
Thanks very much, Gail. As always, it's good to be here with you on this Monday. In addition to all the news about last week's snow, there was also plenty of news involving Iowa politics, some of it revolving around Republican Congressman Steve King. King confirmed last week that he will run for a 10th term as a congressman and told a TV interviewer, in his words, "I have nothing to apologize for." King has a long history of controversial remarks on such matters as race and immigration. He's been criticized by national and state leaders of his own party, has been stripped of his committee assignments in Washington, and has drawn three Republican primary challengers for the 2020 race. Also last week, a new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll showed that both Republican Governor Kim Reynolds and Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst have high job approval ratings. Governor Reynolds hit her highest job approval rating yet, with 59% of Iowans saying they like what she's doing. Senator Ernst's approval ratings were also her highest ever, with 57% of Iowans saying they like the job she's doing. Just days after that poll came out, word came that former Iowa Democratic Governor Tom Vilsack, who was seen by many as the party's most prominent possible challenger to Ernst, would not run against her next year. Also last week, word that Governor Reynolds announced she would not appeal a ruling that struck down a state law that banned most abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. Her decision not to appeal means the law will never take effect, handing a victory to supporters of legal abortion. Governor Reynolds signed the law into effect last year, but a district court judge ruled it was unconstitutional. The governor said she does not see a way to successfully appeal the ruling to the Iowa Supreme Court. Later in the week, anti-abortion activists rallied at the state capitol, urging passage of bills aimed at additional abortion restrictions. Meanwhile, the governor named appeals court judge Christopher McDonald to the Iowa Supreme Court last week. McDonald will become the first person of color to ever serve on the court. McDonald is 44 years old, and he was born in Thailand during the Vietnam War. He has served on the Court of Appeals since 2013. There was also word last week that former Democratic gubernatorial candidate Fred Hubbell was hit by a car while he was riding his bike in Scottsdale, Arizona. A driver ran a red light and struck Hubbell, who underwent two different surgeries for a broken pelvis. His injuries are not life-threatening, but will require physical therapy. The Hubbells own a home in Scottsdale. He lost his gubernatorial race against Iowa Governor Reynolds last November. Still on politics, several Democratic Party presidential hopefuls made their way to Ames on Saturday night. California Senator Kamala Harris, former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro, and former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper all showed up at the Collegiate United Methodist Church for the Story County Democrats' Soup Supper fundraiser. Harris told the crowd she wants to restore opportunities for all Americans. Castro said new energy and new leadership are needed in the political landscape. Hickenlooper said that finding common ground on issues such as universal health care and mental health is essential. Hickenlooper has not yet formally declared that he's running for president, but he said in his words, "I feel like it's a calling." Meanwhile, last week, another new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll showed that support for President Trump's proposed wall had increased in Iowa during the past year, but state residents remain divided on the issue. The poll showed that 37% of Iowans said the wall should be funded, no matter what else happens with immigration policy. That's up 7 percentage points since January of last year. 36% of Iowans said the wall should not be funded under any circumstances. And yet another new Iowa poll showed that 78% of Iowans want to make it easier for patients to use medical marijuana, and nearly half favor legalizing recreational marijuana. On the crime beat, a woman was shot and killed Friday night in the parking lot of a restaurant in Altoona. The victim was 29-year-old Chakisha Clark of Des Moines. A person of interest in the shooting, 30-year-old Kaylin Burgess, was found dead outside a Des Moines home from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Two crime stories that are centered in Ames made statewide news this past week. One of them involved the man accused of killing former Iowa State student Celia Barkina Rosamena last September. The trial of Colin Richards was moved from late April to next September. If he's convicted, he faces life in prison. He's in the Story County Jail on a $5 million cash bond. Meanwhile, there was word last week that four Des Moines residents were charged with murder in the fatal 2017 shooting of a man in Southwest Ames. The four were charged with first-degree murder in the killing of 21-year-old Xavier Jordan Shepley, who was shot during a robbery at the Fountain View Apartments on Mayfield Drive in Ames. Also last week, an Iowa woman whose infant son's lifeless body was found in a baby swing was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. A jury had found 22-year-old Cheyenne Harris guilty of first-degree murder and child endangerment causing death in the death of 4-year-old Sterling Cohn. The infant's body was found at an apartment in Alta Vista. An autopsy showed he died of malnutrition, dehydration, and an E. coli infection. The baby's father, Zachary Cohn, had earlier been sentenced to life in prison. Meanwhile, an Iowa man who threatened a teacher with anthrax was sentenced to 18 months in prison. 67-year-old Mondell Olson of Nevada was arrested after he allegedly sent a note to a teacher at Central Elementary School. He also allegedly crushed up non-toxic prescription medication and placed it inside the envelope with the note. There was more last week, including news that a homeless man charged with murder in the hit-and-run death of another homeless resident in Des Moines was found not competent to stand trial. 21-year-old Dontarius Bomar was charged with murder and robbery in the death of Charles Childs, who was found dead in a homeless camp. Authorities said Bomar's vehicle had struck Childs, but a judge decided that Bomar suffers from a mental disorder that prevents him from understanding the charges against him and committed Bomar for treatment in an effort to restore him to competency. Also last week, a custodian at an Eastern Iowa college was arrested after police said he took pictures of women dressing in the college's locker room. 45-year-old Jeffrey Pospisil of Marion was arrested in connection with the incident at Cornell College. He's been fired and banned from the college. Meanwhile, a Des Moines pastor was arrested this past Friday for allegedly shooting at a car that was carrying his own daughter. Authorities said 44-year-old Reverend Michael Devon Cameron of the Revival Center Church of God in Christ shot at the car carrying his daughter because, Cameron told them, he was trying to protect her from someone she was in an abusive relationship with. There was much more last week, including a report that Iowa's state auditor found more than $250,000 in questionable travel-related expenses at a Northeast Iowa hospital. The report deals with spending at the Regional Medical Center in Manchester. 2 years ago, the hospital's then CEO resigned as a result of questions about possible improper expenditures. Also last week, a bill to make it easier for Iowa families to opt their children out of vaccinations stalled in a Senate subcommittee after senators heard from dozens of parents and medical professionals. The bill would have let parents gain exemptions to required childhood vaccinations if the shots conflicted with their conscientiously held beliefs. Residents already can gain vaccination exemptions for medical reasons or for religious reasons. Last week also brought word that the state of Iowa rejected a proposal that two environmental groups said would make the state's lakes cleaner. The Environmental Law and Policy Center and the Iowa Environmental Council filed a petition last November, pushing the state to adopt stricter standards for nearly 160 recreational lakes. But the State Environmental Protection Commission rejected that petition last week, saying the move could cost Iowa cities and towns more than $200 million to meet the stricter standards. And there was word last week that the Boondocks USA truck stop had new owners again. A Nebraska couple has bought the iconic Interstate 35 truck stop after its original sale fell through. The Boondocks truck stop was closed last October and sold to a California company, but that sale didn't go. Now the new Nebraska owners hope to reopen it by the end of March. On the weather beat, yes, we had more snow last week, but we also had word from the National Weather Service that several Iowa rivers have an increased risk of, yes, flooding. That prediction does not mean that heavy flooding is sure to take place, but the signs are there. And proving there's a Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll for just about everything, yet another new poll showed that just 37% of Iowans celebrate winter, while 52% complain about it. The rest of those polled said they weren't sure what to think about winter. In sports, Iowa State's men's and women's basketball teams were both in action last week. The men's team lost to Baylor 73-69 and then lost to TCU 75-72. The women's team defeated Oklahoma 91-70, then lost to Baylor 73-60. And that's your weekly summary of news from around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart.
Thanks to Dennis for that news update. Project Search, a collaboration between ISU and the Arc of Story County, is in its third year at Iowa State. The program provides internships on campus for young people with disabilities so that they gain employability and social skills. Project Search has an upcoming business summit to try to get local businesses involved as well. The person responsible for bringing Project Search to ISU is Linda Lind, who is a colleague of mine in the School of Education. So I asked her to come in and talk about Project Search, and she brought along with her one of this year's interns. Linda, we'll start with you. Can you tell us just what Project Search is?
So Project Search was started in 1996 at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. There was a woman who worked in the emergency room and had a hard time keeping people staffed. And so she knew that there was this untapped source of people that would make wonderful employees. And so it just grew from there. It came to Iowa in 2011. We started it on campus 3 years ago. This is our third year. And what we do is we provide interns, our young adults between the ages of 18 and 30, opportunities to gain employability skills, such as learning how to use computers, working in transportation, that kind of thing.
And so this is actually a national program, so it's not just here in Iowa and not just at ISU.
There's over 450 sites worldwide, and that's growing each and every day.
And so it serves young people who have various kinds of disabilities?
Intellectual disabilities and autism, primarily.
How did it get started at ISU?
Carl Smith, who has since retired, professor in School of Education, specifically in special ed, had this idea. He asked if I wanted to be on board with it from the very start. So we talked to the dean of the College of Human Sciences, and we talked to the various departments, to all of the different units within the College
within
of Human
the college.
Sciences.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we started. That's where we had the internships for the first 2 years. Last year, we were given permission to grow it across campus, and grow from 4 interns to 10.
What departments or other areas do they work in now besides the College of Human Sciences?
Okay, so we have them in transportation. We have them in dining. We have them in residence halls. We have them at the library, at the tea room, at parking. We have some in Ivy College of Business, World Languages and Cultures. I know I'm forgetting some.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's really spread throughout campus.
Yes.
And we have one of the young people who's involved in this project with us today. Megan, do you want to introduce yourself, say your name, and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm Megan McCauley. I am 26 years old, and I graduated from Gilbert. And, well, I graduated in 2011.
And where have you worked on campus?
I worked at parking, ISU Daily, and transportation services.
And that's where you are now?
Mm-hmm.
So what have you liked best so far?
I like doing key tags.
You're going to need to explain that to us.
A key tag is, you put it on a key holder, and then you put keys on there, and then you close it.
It's a way of literally tagging or marking keys that then they're going to distribute and give out to people who work on campus and so on.
Yep.
And you liked that because it was actually kind of hands-on, maybe?
Yes. Yes, it was hands-on. I like it.
Okay. And have there been things that you didn't like doing but you had to do?
I didn't like doing cars.
What did you have to do with the cars?
Vacuum, wipe, do glass windows.
Actually cleaning.
Yeah. But then when you're done cleaning them, they go into the car wash and get rinsed off. The dirt. And
so you don't have to wash the outside. They have a car wash.
Yep.
And I know at the end of the semester, spring, you have like a graduation and so on.
Yep.
Are you looking forward to that?
Yep. I am going to cry a little bit.
Why will you cry?
Because it'll be sad and emotions will run free. Yeah. It runs free in my heart and all this sorts of stuff.
Why is it sad that it's coming to an end?
Because I will miss Linda.
You'll miss Linda.
Yeah. and all my friends.
And your friends are the other young people that are in the program?
Yep.
And have you made some friends in the different departments you work in?
I made a connection at parking because they made popcorn.
And they shared it with you.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I'm going to come back to you in a minute, but I have a couple more questions for Linda, okay?
Okay.
I know that you were really instrumental in bringing this project, and I know, as in starting any new project, there's often challenges and potential things that come up that might undo it. But why was it so important to you to bring this to ISU?
We talk about inclusion, and I think we do a good job of it on campus, but I think we forget that people with disabilities can be just as productive as anybody else. And so watching the students that are walking across campus and interacting with our kids, it just seems to have changed the culture. I know that the supervisors talk about it, changing the culture within their different departments. And I think we're seeing that across campus as well. We try to have them out doing CHS week. Each year, we have them doing various things. They decorated a Christmas tree at the Knoll. So we try to get them out and involved with their same age peers. And I think we're seeing a more accepting, welcoming campus, I think, for people with disabilities.
So it's a learning and growing experience for the young people who are involved, but also for the others who come into contact with them to challenge some of the assumptions that people make about people with various kinds of disabilities.
Well, and with that being said, there's been some instances, too, on the bus where people have not been necessarily welcoming. And I think that has been a learning experience for our interns. And we use that in class to talk about inclusion. It's not always pleasant, but it's something that, you know, it makes me more aware of work that I still need to do.
And so in addition to the training that they're getting in their workplaces, you mentioned a class. So they have other kinds of learning that they're involved in.
So they come to campus at 8:30 in the morning, and from 8:30 to 9:30, they have class where they're learning social skills. They're learning more employability skills. So they were working on Google Docs. They've been writing their resumes. They are going to come to the business summit and do mock interviews. So we're preparing them for that. We just try to use a lot of what's coming up, problems that occur in their in their internship, and we use that as a springboard for, okay, this is what we're going to talk about today. And then they come back again at 2 to 2:30, and that's a time for them to debrief about their day, talk about things that went well, talk about things that maybe were a struggle, set some goals for the next day. The rest of the time, then they're out in their internship.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the summit that's coming up. Tell us about that.
So the summit is a half-day event where we have invited businesses from Ames out to the athletic facility, and we're going to provide some background knowledge about how to work with individuals with disabilities and how they're an untapped source of employees. And so getting the kids out there to be able to interact with different businesses, to provide the businesses with a series of rotations where they can gain more information. So we'll be talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act in one of the breakout sessions. I'll be talking about, these are some simple accommodations that you can make for an employee with a disability. The third rotation then is where they're going to get to interact with the students. It's going to be held from 8 until 11:30,
mm-hmm.
Friday, March 1st.
March 1st.
At the Jacobson Building, second floor of the Jacobson Building. Anybody's welcome. They can also go to the website and sign up there, too.
In particular, you're looking for people who have businesses.
Yeah.
And would be interested in potentially hiring some of the Project Search graduates.
Right. And Megan already works at Fairway.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, I do work at Fairway.
And do you like that?
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
For 6 years now.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I've been there for 6 years. I really want to get like 20 hours at work.
Oh, you'd like to increase your hours there.
Yeah, but I haven't got the chance.
Because we keep you busy.
Megan, that's something I was going to ask you. What kind of a job would you like to get now that you've finished this program?
Yeah, I would like to have my own business.
Any ideas of what kind of business?
Well, a coffee shop and a restaurant and maybe at night be a dance floor.
Wow, you have a big vision for what you'd like to do. So kind of like a coffee shop during the day and a club kind of at night where people can come and dance.
Yep, and enjoy appetizers.
So you're interested really in the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you get ideas from the summit and make some connections that will enable you to do that. Of the young people who have completed Project Search in the previous 2 years, how would you say it's helped them in terms of their job opportunities?
One of them from the first year is one of the best employees at the cafe, and they just rave about him. He got that job right after graduation. Several of them have been hired by the Waterford Retirement Home. But I think it's really changed them. Tom, I'm going to use as an example because he was so shy. So very shy. So I think it's increased their self-confidence, their self-worth. I've just seen them grow. I see these guys grow from the beginning of the year to the end of the year and their confidence level.
Mm-hmm. And now you've been on the radio. How's that feel?
It feels great. I like being on radio.
She's been excited about this for a week.
Well, we're always looking for volunteers here. We can't offer paid jobs, but we're always looking for volunteers.
Okay, I'll
when you have more free time.
I'll look at it, and maybe I could get in touch with you guys.
All right. That would be great.
Do you guys have a card?
I will give you my contact information. Okay. I'd be glad to do that. So businesses who are listening, this is a great opportunity to really support someone coming into a career and providing them with opportunities that they might not otherwise have. You mentioned that this project has grown in the number of interns and the number of departments or places on campus where they are involved. Did the word just spread, or how did those other groups get involved? And did you have to do a lot of convincing people, or was there eagerness?
There was eagerness, but it was a lot of legwork in the beginning. So I did not a mass because I sent it out to every individual department, but a lot of going over, taking even the interns over and presenting to the various departments, meeting with deans or department chairs, telling them the expectations that we had for an intern being in their program. But the interest was just and continues to be phenomenal. I mean, people are ready to jump on board.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my goal after they graduate, is to continue to find more. I would love to see them get into like groundskeeping, that kind of stuff. Just continuing to beat on doors. And I think we have a really good base of internships right now. And the people that are working with our interns are phenomenal about sharing their successes. They're so willing to come and talk at Project Search. They're willing to talk at graduation. So I think they're instrumental in spreading the word, too.
Do you find that you have to do some work, almost like professional development, with the people in the offices and departments in terms of their learning of how to work with and support folks with particular kinds of disabilities?
Yes. So at the beginning of this year, we had 2 separate days where we had professional development, and we had good response. We would have 4 or 5 or 6 people from each department that was going to participate come to this training, and they were so eager to learn, and they're still eager to find out, well, this isn't working, so what can I do? So we need to think about doing some more continuing education type.
Mm-hmm.
Things on camp.
So, Megan, I'm going to let you have the final word. People are listening out there. What would you want them to know about working with or hiring young people like you who might have a disability but have lots of things to offer?
Well, it doesn't matter if you have a disability. You're able to do the job. With the disability, we're able to do all the stuff that other people could do. We may not be good at all the things that people could do. We're good at other things that other people miss.
So you may have some talents and abilities that other people don't have.
Yes.
Can you give us an example of something that you think you maybe do a little bit better than other people?
I may I could dance. Some people can't dance.
That's true.
Yeah, I can dance.
So recognizing that everyone has limits and everyone has things they can do really well.
And maybe most people could dance and maybe real good, but some people have, like, limitations. Like, if they're in a wheelchair, they have they can still dance. They can move around their wheelchair around. It doesn't matter. We're all equals in our own ways.
And that's a great example of people dancing, even people who are restricted in their mobility or restricted to a wheelchair.
They can do it too.
I know one thing she's done really well is she's changed the environment of every place she's been. She's kind of the prankster.
I can tell that.
Maybe.
The places where she's been on campus have come to value that from her.
Oh, definitely.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for coming in today and talking with us and educating us all on this wonderful program and giving us a little bit of a slice of your life and who you are.
Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
That was Linda Lind and Megan McCauley from Project Search. We'll include a link to their webpage when we put this show up on our website, and there you can find information on their upcoming business summit. The United Church of Christ holds an annual Theologian in Residence weekend. This year, the weekend is called Immigration Matters, Join Together, Finding Solutions. And the events will run from Friday evening until Sunday morning, March 1st through 3rd. Featured leaders will be Reverend David Vasquez Levy, president of the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, California, Des Moines immigration lawyer Sonia Paras Conrad, and Erica Johnson, program director at American Friends Service Committee in Des Moines. KHOI's Ursula Rudenberg spoke with Dr. Vasquez Levy in Berkeley, California, and they spoke about the upcoming event on Friday and his visit to Ames.
Friday night is part of a number of conversations I'm having with attorney generals of various states. The last one was in Oregon. Prior to that, I was in Washington. We're working on one in Minnesota. So just a variety of different states, part of a larger conversation that is critical to the need to reframe our conversation around immigration.
So this is a conversation with the attorney generals of various states, specifically about how they approach immigration in their state?
Yes. It is to have this conversation about how we framed a discussion about immigration. For me, this work began in Iowa. I spent 15 years at Luther College in Northeast Iowa. I was one of the campus pastors, part of the college ministries that connected the campus with the community.
So how did these things come up for you as a pastor?
Specifically, this really came to a fore in our work in a small town in Postville, Northeast Iowa. That was the site in 2008 of the largest single-site immigration raid in the country's history at that point. It was a large immigration raid at a large meatpacking plant that detained about 400 people. The town was a town of 2,500, so if you think about removing 400 working adults from that community, it devastated the community. Within 6 months, the company had gone bankrupt. The city was bankrupt. 90% of the rental units in town were bankrupt. You know, so the town of Postville was, before the raid, this really thriving community that was being strengthened by the immigrant community that was there. After the raid, it was really devastated economically, not just the immigrant community, but everybody in town. And I think that raid showed that if you go after the immigrant community, you're going to affect everybody else, because the immigrant communities are revitalizing and really helping imagine a different future for rural Iowa, you know, that is very much in keeping with the values of the heartland. If we go after them, we're going after ourselves in a way. We're really undermining our own well-being. In most small towns in Iowa, if you have 100 kids graduating from high school today, you might have 30 coming into kindergarten. you know, that's really alarming for many small towns to see drop in population. That's not the case in communities that have immigrant populations. So we were interested in that as an academic interest to understand what was happening in Postville. So we had lots of ways in which our students were learning in that community. They were involved, providing support, learning a lot from multicultural community that was there. Just really fascinating. So to us, this was kind of like a great place of learning and the possibility of the future. And then the raid changed all of that, and then it became an important place for us to be engaged in responding. I must say, my own personal commitment and that of my school here at Pacific School of Religion grows out of that experience in Iowa. Many of the people impacted by the raid were people from Guatemala. I'm originally from Guatemala, so I had connections to the community there personally. I'm an immigrant myself, so I know what my own desires are for the contribution to the nation and to the well-being of our country that we share in.
So this was a formative experience for you professionally.
It really demonstrated the damage that is being caused by fear-driven immigration enforcement. In contrast to the way that when the community came together, what a difference they did make. When the community comes together to support each other, it showed that we can do better. We can approach it as an understanding that our best interest is tied to the best interest of these immigrant communities.
So how was that demonstrated?
It was remarkable to see how people across the whole spectrum of political persuasion and religious background came together to support the community. People came from everywhere. We got donations for the response from all 50 states, and lots of people from various religious communities, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, various groups of Christians, came together to help support the community that had been devastated to the extent that they could. They helped to ensure that there was due process, that the people who were taken into custody and then sent into prison, at least we were able to help track them, keep them in touch with their families. And then for the next 3 years that followed, a very concerted effort to help the community recover.
So if you're speaking with attorney generals in different states, coming here to Iowa is kind of special because this is really where you had the most experience personally.
Very much, and I'm thankful to be in conversation with the Attorney General, who understands the importance of talking about how we enforce our laws, but also evaluate the impact of how our laws are being shaped and enforced. I think Iowa represents the kind of space where right now the political discussions about immigration make it sound like as if we can't get along and we can't find a common solution to things. My experience in Postville showed otherwise. Well, right now we're being divided by our fears. You know, a lot of the rhetoric we're being told right now is that immigration is a threat to us, to the point that our president is saying that it's a matter of national security. We are not under threat. We are not being attacked by a horde of dangerous people. Iowa is a perfect example of it. Immigrant communities across all of Iowa represent really the family values we stand for. We need labor in those communities, and the work they're doing is the work that Iowans are proud of, labor in the fields. Working in construction, caring for older adults, creating opportunities for families to stay together, feeding each other. We need children in those communities, being in schools. Immigrant churches are vital. These are the things that are our core values, really a brighter future. So how do we understand what's happening? Our current immigration system does not have any way for those workers who want to come to vital work to come to the country and do so. So we need to change our laws, because our immigration laws right now do not reflect our best interests, and they do not reflect our deepest held values. In the meantime, we need to talk about how are we enforcing our laws. That's the conversation with the attorney generals.
So what is the message that you bring to the attorney general based on what you've learned?
Well, what has come up so far in the ones I've been involved in, and I think it will be the case with Attorney General Tom Miller, is the fact that Mr. Miller recognizes that they are responsible for ensuring the proper enforcement of the law. That's what they're watching for. That's their role, right? And in that role, they have to recognize that there are laws that we have in place right now that are fairly limiting around immigration. But how we enforce them matters, right? So how do we balance the need to do that properly with the well-being of our communities and the people who live within the state?
It's interesting that right now it's really on a legal level.
Yeah, you're right. This is an interesting moment. Why talk to attorney generals? At Pacific School of Religion, our commitment is to recognizing that our leadership needs to be cross-sectoral, right? The challenges we're facing as a society, in any area you pick, all these big issues we're trying to address need to be addressed in a cross-sectoral way. We need to involve government, we need to involve private sector and companies, we need to involve not-for-profits, we need to involve churches. That's the kind of leadership we have always prepared as a seminary, right? We prepare pastors who are going to be in congregations where all these different parts of the society come together. You know, you look at rural communities in Iowa, and the church is the one place where you're going to have the politicians sitting with the business people, sitting with the workers, sitting with the teachers. So pastors have historically been these cross-sectoral leaders, right? They help to bring people to the table. So my conversations with attorney generals is part of a larger conversation I'm hoping we all have with government, with business, with churches, with not-for-profits, right? We want to address our big issues together. We can do better together. And the bottom line reality is we cannot deport our way out of this. We cannot round everybody up and deport them out of the country. That's just not going to work. And every politician knows that. What they're doing is just creating fear in order there to control populations, right? That's not what our laws are intended to do. So that's where we have to talk, right? And in the meantime, while we do that, we have to enforce our current laws. So the attorney generals have a key role in ensuring we're doing that in a way that reflects our best interests. Immigration law is very complex. It requires interpretation. And that's the case with our religious documents as well. When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? He said, love your God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. So then the question comes back, who's my neighbor? That's what the immigration law is about. Who's my neighbor? And Jesus is saying, well, what's the best interest of the community? So when we look at our immigrant neighbors, are they contributing to our community? Are their kids going to schools? Are they revitalizing our churches? Yes.
I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and we're listening to the Reverend Dr. David Vasquez Levy, president of the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley. Dr. Vasquez Levy, please tell us a little bit about the Pacific School of Religion.
Pacific School of Religion was actually the very first seminary to be established west of the Mississippi. So we've been at this work for over 150 years. Our education does prepare pastors. Half of our graduates go to leading congregations across the whole country. Many of them go into academic work and research. A large number of them go into service in not-for-profit organizations, businesses, and other areas. So what we say is they're spiritually rooted leaders.
Can you give us a sense of the curriculum?
Our education does three things. It blows your mind, it emboldens your heart, and it strengthens your hands. And what that means is our education tries to help you reframe the way you think about the world, drawing on our religious traditions to think very big picture, emboldening our heart. We're living through a time when we need practices that will help us sustain ourselves and to sustain community. But not just personally, but communally, that help communities feel a part of something bigger. And the third one is our education's trying to help leaders do their job better. How can they become more effective? Strengthen their hands, right? Help them to know better how to organize a group of people, how to lead a new congregation, how to imagine a future at a time when many congregations are and communities are struggling to imagine their future.
Are the students at your school interdenominational?
Yeah, we have official relationships with the United Church of Christ, and so we do have a connection to the tradition that the congregation that's hosting this event is from. We also have official connections with the United Methodist Church and with the Disciples of Christ. But our student body is, as you described, very diverse. They come from a lot of different backgrounds, as is our faculty and our staff. We're in Berkeley, California, right next to the University of California, Berkeley. So we know well the context that I'll be in Ames, being in a college town and the importance of that space, and the way that those communities can help think about the future of our more diverse world and how do we celebrate that? How do we enter into that without fear? But we'll have the discussion on Friday night with the Attorney General, and then on Saturday there's great opportunity for folks to get down to a little bit more in detail about how we do this. We're going to be looking at texts and scriptures and how does that inform the way we think about immigration. We'll talk about it from this cross-sectoral way. How do we think about it from a legal perspective? How do we think about it from a financial business perspective? We can imagine the world as a more beautiful, more diverse place without fear.
We've been speaking with Reverend Dr. David Vasquez-Levy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Bye-bye.
Reverend Dr. Vasquez-Levy will hold his public dialogue with Attorney General Tom Miller on Friday evening, March 1st, from 7 to 9 at the Pioneer Room in the ISU Student Union. To find out more about that event and the entire weekend of presentations on immigration issues, most of which will be held at the United Church of Christ, you can go to their website, AmesUCC.org/TIR, which stands for Theologian in Residence, or just Google Theologian in Residence Ames and you'll find it. We'll put the link on our website as well.
Shallow, in the shallow, la la la.
That was an acoustic version of Shallow by Jimmy Allen and Abby Anderson. Shallow was the song that won the Academy Award last night for Best Song.
Check out the music of Randy Burke, our next Pantorium Sessions artist.
Same stretch of road, same set of wheels, where you drove me head over heels back then. I want to drive again.
Randy Burke and the Prisoners will be bringing their tunes to the KHOI Front Window Stage this Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m. sharp. Come see this free live performance or listen live to the action at khoifm.org. KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM.
Coming up next, we were scheduled to have Crystal Davis with us from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, but because of the weather and road conditions, we just had a call from her that she was still en route. So she may make it, but she may not. But she had already sent me a lot of the information that she was going to be telling us about. So Cynthia and I, our engineer, Cynthia McClure, thought we would just bring this information to you if Crystal doesn't get here.
Yep. Traveling outside right now is pretty perilous. So, and she
comes from out of town.
Yeah. So, you know, take it slow.
She tried to get here, but we're going to fill in for you, Crystal.
Okay. We'll try our best.
One of the first things on the list that she sent me and that she always talks about each month when she comes in is what's up with Cyclone Cinema. Do you know what Cyclone Cinema is?
It is the cinema at the Memorial Union. They have a bowling alley and cinema there. It's a free movies.
They actually don't hold it in the MU.
Oh, I thought
it's on campus, but they hold it in a big lecture hall in Carver.
Oh.
Yeah. We have coming up this coming weekend, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And then the following weekend, March 7th through the 10th, Aquaman.
Oh, cool.
After that, Mary Poppins Returns. And the last weekend in March, March 28th to the 31st, is On the Basis of Sex, which is the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, about gender equality.
Gender equality.
Yeah, workplace rights. It's really the story of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's efforts to bring that to the courts for progress on that. So those are Cyclone Cinema. Free, open to the public. Anyone can go look for information on the ISU website. And then, you know, they always have good things at Wheat's Fields.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Ongoing. So the first thing that's coming up is this Friday, March 1st, 5 to 7, there is a First Friday cheese tasting, which they have each month. And that's on Friday evening at Wheat's Fields. Round paperweight workshop. You can learn to make and create a round paperweight using cherry wood blocks to form the piece. And this is in the Cicati Art Glass Studio.
It's Cicati.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And it'll vary from person to person exactly what they come up with. But the glass blower will work one-on-one with each person. And you do have to be 12 to 15
It's molten.
Careful.
Molten glass. And Art Cicati is a very, very talented artist, and he started with the Iowa Gaffers Guild there at Iowa State. So he started blowing glass via the university and then branched off and did his own thing and has his own art studio. And he's world-renowned. I mean, he gets contracts all over.
So that's something if someone wants to try their hand at it. Mucky Duck Quiz Night.
Oh, fun.
Monday, March 4th. And I think people know where Mucky Duck Pub is down on South Duff. And every Monday at 8 p.m. says get to the pub early for a good seat.
Oh, yeah.
It gets very busy and very competitive. So that sounds like fun. A little later in the month, Thursday, March 7th, back at Wheat's Fields, you can learn to make sourdough bread.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm signed up for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun. I miss really good sourdough from California over in San Francisco. Mm. They have really, really good bread over there.
Yeah. We do associate sourdough with San Francisco, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that will be Thursday, March 7th. And Wheatfields has a lot of food-related things going on. So if people are interested in that, they should check that out. And I should say also that all the things we're listing and many more, Crystal sent 13 pages of information for the month of March. So thank you, Crystal, for putting that all together. But all this information is on the website of Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. So we're just giving you little smatterings of it, a little taste of it. Yeah. But this one sounds really interesting. The Bureau of Infrastructure Tourism Listening Bus Tour.
Oh, yeah, that's an art event, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Well, it's part of the Festival of Personal Geographies, which just sounds so intriguing. Well, this is, I'm not familiar with this, so I'll read what it says. It says Saturday, March 9th, 1 to 3 p.m., and Alex Braidwood, assistant professor in the College of Design at Iowa State, will present a tour of Ames infrastructure organized by his own Bureau of Infrastructure Tourism, BIT. BIT is an organization that develops tours and documentation of various infrastructure features from around the world. These elements of the built environment often go unnoticed or ignored and are thought of as non-places. So this tour allows participants to document their experiences in these overlooked parts of town. And that just sounds really interesting. Pre-registration for the workshop is necessary since seats on the bus are limited. But it doesn't really say exactly where to get information. But I think if you Google it, it's part of the Festival of Personal Geographies. So that might be interesting to some people. There's also later in the month a celebration of Irish beers and cheeses.
I wonder why that could be happening.
That's Wednesday, March 13th.
Before St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm. And the Ames Area Amateur Astronomers.
Oh, yeah.
I have something called the Big Bang, which is going to be Saturday, March 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. And it's sponsored by that group, the Ames Area Amateur Astronomers. And it's out at the Storey County Conservation Center at McFarland Park. So you can go there in the evening for some astronomical viewing. Telescopes and binoculars will be available, so you don't have to bring your own. And there'll be people there to tell you what you're looking at. And let's see what else we have time for. Ah, there's another session of Ready to Run Iowa, and we've covered that on Local Talk before.
Yeah. It's women engaging in politics.
Right, and it helps prepare people to get involved.
Or even just get on boards and become more civically minded, which is always good.
And that's toward the end of the month, Friday, March 29th. And it's called Ready to Run Iowa, and you can look for information on that. It's sponsored by the CAT Center. I think that's all we'll have time for, and I hope Crystal thinks we did it a little bit of justice. We did some justice to the information she sent us and shared as much as we could.
Stay safe, Crystal, and all the other travelers in the mid-Iowa region, so be safe.
Absolutely. And it will melt soon. We'll just keep thinking that. Think melt. Maybe we can generate enough heat. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. I'm your host, Gail Seiler, and Cynthia McClure has been helping out from behind the engineering board. This is KHOI Community Radio. And Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday, and 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered, as I said, by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Cage Shelley. We also heard Shallow by Jimmy Allen and Abby Anderson. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.